Welcome to the Derek Loudermilk Show. This is episode 391 with Kelly Sparta. Kelly Sparta is my guest today. She's a friend and fellow podcaster, and she may be one of the most experienced energy workers I've ever met. She has almost 50 years of energy work. She's done 3,000 personal energy scans, and she's a fantastic teacher. She has over 500 pieces of training material across all of her different programs. And in this episode, we're going to learn some basic things like how to be safe when you start doing energy work, how to protect yourself and your house, how to tell the difference between an extraterrestrial and a demon, some of the tricky situations that Kelly has gotten out of that she mistakenly got into, and we'll talk about different paths to enlightenment, the two paths to enlightenment, and then she does a little mini session for me around the energetics of my upcoming business launch. We'll talk about the consciousness, the egregore built into the city of Washington, D.C., and a whole lot more. So without further ado, here is Kelly Sparta. Kelly Sparta, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Derek.
Yeah, good to see you again. We chatted on your show last week, the Spirit Sherpa, and you seem to be one of the sort of most experienced folks that I've encountered. You've been doing this for a while. And when I was reading your website, it sounds like you were learning metaphysical things with your mom growing up. And I was wondering if maybe you could just tell us a little bit about what that was like and your relationship with your mom when you were a kid.
Yeah, well, so my mom and dad divorced when I was like five, and I was my mother's best friend. And so basically, she had a lot of her own personal stuff that she needed to deal with. And so she would go out and do these personal growth and development classes, and then she would bring them home. So like, she brought home Est when I was 5 years old. Now, for those who don't know, Est was the not kinder, gentler version of Landmark's Forum. And so it was really confrontative, in your face sort of stuff, but it was all about personal empowerment and, you know, integrity and commitment and things like that, just like the Forum is today. So we had all of that. Instead of watching TV, we would sit around and listen to personal growth tapes. I don't even remember all the people we listened to, but I was raised on Seth and Ram Dass and J.C. Knight and Abraham Hicks and, you know, the whole shebang. And on top of it, mom had been psychic when she was a child, and she had gotten scared of it and shut it down and never could figure out how to open it back up. So she was convinced, absolutely committed to the fact that I should not be afraid of my gifts. And so along with all of the personal growth stuff, she took me to psychic development classes and palmistry classes and tarot classes. And I had my first deck of tarot cards when I was 12. I was doing self-hypnosis by the time I was 10. You know, this is just it. People ask me, how long have you been doing this? You know, and I'm like, no, you don't understand. This isn't what I do. It's who I am. Right. I've been doing this for so long. I don't know how to be anything else. Right. So it's a very different way of being when you come up in it, because you just, when you learn things before the age of reason, they get in at a really deep level. Like, I just inherently understood how to do guided meditations. You know, I just knew, because I had listened to so many by the time I was of the age of reason at seven, you know, that it just, the format, the structure, the understanding, the all of it. And then I became fascinated with metaphor and mythology and, you know, childhood stories, you know, children's literature, all of which use metaphor and archetypal constructs to create stories, which now I utilize all of that as part of the work that I do when I do transformational ritual. And so, you know, it all just sort of built in and integrated. And then as I got older, I also studied wellness And, you know, mom and I did metaphysics way back in the day too. And so we did that. And then I did, I studied Wicca and I studied shamanism. And I've walked through a whole bunch of different paths along the way. I'm a Reiki master teacher. I don't teach it anymore, but I am one. So I came through that and I've done, I don't even know how many workshops and things with various and sundry people. I've easily spent probably $150,000, $200,000 doing education in all of these different realms. I'm certified in shiatsu, you know, so I got some Chinese medicine in the background. I helped mom study for her nursing degree when I was 6 and 7. So all of Grey's Anatomy is in the back of my head somewhere and occasionally comes flying out of my mouth. So yeah, I've got this broad spectrum of knowledge base. And the thing that I see that's the biggest challenge for people getting into spirituality is that everything is siloed. You know, you've got wellness over here, you have energy work over here, you have magic over there, you have personal growth over here, you have yoga, you have, you know, it's all sorts of different silos of information. And you know, they act like each silo is the be all end all, but it isn't. They're all facets of one big thing. And so when you break down the silos, you really start to see things at a broader scale. You start to understand what's going on at a deeper level, and you start to stitch things together that you didn't realize actually interrelated. And that was one of the surprises. You were on my podcast last week. That was one of the surprises that I got when I started my podcast was I thought I was building a podcast for beginners. So if you go to the beginning of my podcast, you will hear the beginner's guide to energy, magic, and the spirit world as the tagline for the podcast. And that changed, I don't know, like 6 months in, it changed because I kept getting people who were very experienced practitioners coming up to me and saying, I love your podcast. And I'm going, why? Why do you love my podcast? Why would you love it? It's a beginner's podcast. And they're like, no. You're taking every 2-hour class I've ever taken in my life and stitching it together into a big world picture. And I had no idea I was doing that. I had no clue. I was like, well, you know, that's how it is in my head. So sure. Okay. It makes sense that I'm doing it, but I was not doing it consciously. And that's when I changed the tagline because I realized that more than just beginners were listening, but it's one of those things that I think is so lacking in the spiritual world today, aside from the fact that we've got a lot of bro marketers who are, you know, recycling PAP, you know, aphorisms and going, oh, look at me, I'm a spiritual teacher, you know, and they don't know the slightest thing about what they're talking about. That's a problem. But, and bro does not just mean men in this case, just so I'm clear. But, you know, they're doing marketing. They're not actually doing teaching. So aside from that, the biggest limitation is the limitation on the people who are doing the teaching because they never learned anything other than what was in their silo. And therefore they have a limited perspective on what they're teaching because they don't see it from the bigger picture. And I could keep going, but I feel like
I'm excited. I'm excited to talk to you about the bigger picture. Cause I don't know if you've seen, I'm on this metaphysical quest basically to try all these different modalities. And I'm starting to, like, whenever you do anything a lot, you start to see patterns and make groupings in your mind. So yeah, I definitely want to get your take on it. But first I want to ask you about your childhood friends. Like, did you have friends that were also into the same stuff as you or?
No, my mother was military, so we moved every year or two. So I didn't have friends for very long. That's one of my superpowers is I can walk in and make a brand new friend in 5 seconds or less because I had to learn how to do that or else I wouldn't have any friends the entire time I was growing up. But the kids that I hung out with, they were just kids, you know, they didn't have this metaphysical quest that they were on. And, you know, I might have shared things with them from time to time, but it was not a focus of my interaction with them.
And partly I'm asking because I have 2 young kids and they love, you know, practicing telepathy with us or trying to control the weather or lucid dreaming, all this stuff. And their friends are constantly asking them, like, can you like teach me telepathy or time bending? And they're and they kind of want to do it, but it's also, I feel like, setting them up to be a little bit different, because most kids are used to just playing with their plastic toys, or whatever it is. So yeah, how would you recommend, like, encouraging, you know, exploring their abilities and also being normal?
Okay. Well, so the first thing I'm going to say is there is no such thing as normal. And the sooner they learn that, the better. And I mean, honestly, the reason I didn't do it with my friends is because there was huge stigma attached to it when I was coming up in the 70s. I mean, you did not talk about this stuff because people thought you were nuts. It is far more accepted today than it was back then. And, you know, it's definitely gone mainstream. And so, you know, my experience has been, when I came out of the spiritual closet, I was 28, I was on my Saturn return, and I had been a real estate agent, and I had just been taking my Reiki classes, and, you know, it was all of that. And I started telling my clients selectively what I could do, you know, like, oh, I can tell you the energy of this house or that house or whatever. And they're like, oh, that's so cool. So my experience is that when you tell people, they go, woo, or they go, ah, right? It's one or the other. They're either attracted or repulsed. And, you know, having just moved away from Richmond, Virginia, where I was right there at the top of the Bible Belt, right? Mm-hmm. I would get a lot of people going, oh, you seem like a really cool person, but you just said something that I'm pretty sure that my pastor says is of the devil. And I'm like, well, I can tell you for a fact that I do not worship the devil, because the devil is your pantheon, not mine. And they were like, what? I'm like, the devil is a Christian pantheon. He's in the Christian pantheon. I am not practicing Christianity in the form of the religion that you are practicing. Therefore, he is not in my pantheon. And therefore, I can't worship someone I don't believe in. Right? And they're just like, what? Sorry. But yeah, I mean, no one in the world does everyone like. So you're better off to learn to say, these are the people that are my people, and these are the people who are not, and to be okay with that. And my experience of the kids coming up today, I don't know your children personally, but the kids coming up today, Gen Z, are honey badgers. They just don't care. They're like, I'm doing what I'm doing, and it doesn't matter, right? And I love that about Gen Z. I am in love with Gen Z because they don't have all the crap that held us back. They're just like, yep, the world's going to hell in a handbasket, so I don't care. I'm going to do what I want to do. That's kind of where they are. And I love that. I respect that about them. You know, they could go into fear, but they're like, nah, might as well, right? Nothing to lose. Awesome. So I would just say for you, I would say just let them teach their friends if their friends want to learn. If the parents have a cow, well, the parents have a cow. You know, I would probably ask the parents before you have them teach their friends, because that's, you know, nice. But, you know, you can't control your kids 24/7. So,
yeah, you know,
they're going to do what they're going to do.
And it's,
I was,
you know,
a good girl, and I did exactly what I wanted. So. And I was.
I'm really curious to see. they always talk about, like, kids under 7 have the most connection. Like,
yes,
the veil is still thinner for them, or you can see their abilities. I keep waiting for my kids to do something, like, really wild or out there. They seem pretty normal.
Yeah, the thing is that they may be doing it and they don't realize it's not normal. This is how it usually happens, is that, you know, they're having a conversation with an imaginary friend, and, you know, they're like, oh, everybody's got an imaginary friend, it's not a big deal, right? But they're actually talking to somebody on the other side, which is usually what the imaginary friends are. Yeah. You know, they're usually people from the other side of the veil.
I had an imaginary friend when I was a kid, and I don't really remember if I could see them or what it was like. But it's, so there's, my imaginary friend's name was Ami. And it turns out there's a book written, like, when I was 3, about an extraterrestrial named Ami. And this is like an international bestseller. There's like millions of copies of this book sold. And it's an ET named Ami who comes and befriends this kid, the character in the book, and like teaches him about extraterrestrial civilization and culture and technology. And I get the feeling that that is actually a real true story, not a fiction, and that that was the person who was visiting me, because it seems real coincidental.
Very possible. Very possible. Yes. You know, I encounter aliens on planet periodically. So
you do?
Oh yeah. Every Physically. So often. Yeah. They're inhabiting bodies. They're inhabiting bodies. So, you know, sometimes they're inhabiting a body that's been abandoned, like somebody died and they came in and took it over. Sometimes they're cohabitating. Wait,
so the person died, but the body stayed alive? I don't understand.
Well, the aliens come in and reanimate, right?
So is this with old people, or like what's the situation in which someone would die?
Oftentimes, so like the one person I can think of right now is she was mid-30s.
Okay.
Felt like she had originally been homeless. And so she wasn't there anymore. It was just the alien there. And the alien was really clumsy. Like, oh my God, asking really, really wrong questions, right? It was clear that they were a social scientist. And they were trying to learn about the society.
Oh, interesting.
And so they were asking questions at a networking meeting that were entirely inappropriate. And
what
and
do you humans do when
well, they didn't say it that way, but but they did ask questions that no one who looked like that person would have asked. You know, they were asking weird questions. And it was clear that it wasn't intentional. There was no malice. There was no, they were truly confused about the responses they were getting. And I took them aside and I said, okay, so you haven't been on planet very long, have you? And they're like, no. I said, okay, you need
really, they disclosed that
yeah,
to you.
They said, no. Yeah. I could tell looking at them. I was like, you know, you could see the eyes were not right. And they were not right in the way of alien, not right in the way of demon. Those are different, not rights in the eyes. And so, you know, I took them aside and I was like, you haven't been here very long. And they're like, no. I said, okay, you're stepping in it. I'm like, you need some rules here. You need to understand how this works. Da, 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 da. And I laid out some structure for them and some rules for them so that they would not do that again, because I'm like, you're going to end up arrested if you keep doing this. And then you will not get the education that you're hoping for. You'll get a completely different education. They were like, okay.
You would think that if an alien was going to come inhabit a human body, they would like get some sort of briefing ahead of time.
Yes, but they were in the U.S. Dominant culture in the U.S. is white, and they were inhabiting a black body. And the rules are very different for those two. And if they did not realize that, they would make these same faux pas.
Oh, interesting. So yeah. They were learning about race.
Yes.
Without knowing. Okay, interesting.
Yeah.
Fascinating. Okay, so is this what you would call like a walk-in situation?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. How common is that? Do you?
I've only met one. I've met one person who is cohabitating consciously, that the alien came in when she was in a really bad car accident and said, you can either leave or you can stay, but I'm going to have to stay with you to keep your body going and to rehabilitate. And then, you know, and then we'll be together for the rest of your life. And so that was one person I knew. And then this other one that I had that experience of.
Wow.
And then, you know, I've seen sort of lurkers. So like there was a kid in, I went to a restaurant, and it was one of those restaurants where you have seating around the main food prep area. So it's a U shape around the food prep area, and they do a single seating and everybody gets fed at the same time, blah, blah, blah. So, but this kid was on the other side of the room, and you know, I've got Grey's Anatomy in the back of my head. The kid had all kinds of markers for neurological distress. And, you know, I was watching him, his eyes weren't working exactly the same. His hands weren't working exactly the same. There were things that were indicators that there was a neurological issue going on. And his parents were clearly unaware because there was zero concern in them. And so I'm like, okay, so something's going on. Now, normally I get permission before I do stuff like this, but the parents were unaware. The kid was in need. It takes a village, right? So I just looked to see what was causing the problem. And it turned out that there were a couple of aliens who were traveling through the universe who had decided the kid was comfortable and they were hanging out in his energy field and they were messing up his neurology. And I looked at them and I was like, ahem, this isn't okay. You can't stay. And they went, what? What? And I said, you're doing damage to this child. You need to go. And they went, oh, we're so sorry. We didn't mean to. And off they went. And over the course of the meal, I watched the neurological stuff disappear.
Whoa.
As his energy field readjusted.
Whoa. Okay. That's super cool. Good on you for doing that.
Well, you know, it's not something I expected to do at dinner, but
right.
Okay.
And so would these aliens have been like also had bodies on a ship and they were like projecting their consciousness or what sort of being?
I don't know. I didn't ask.
Okay.
Yeah. I don't know.
And do you know, okay, this, the first alien you were talking about, the one that was a walk in for this, black person, do you know where they came from? Like, did you learn anything about why they were here? Or okay,
my curiosity levels are very low. It's very funny, but you know, I basically I saw somebody who was fumbling and needed help, and I offered it. You know, that was to me, they're just like anybody else, and so I didn't have a need to dig in and figure stuff out for them. I just was like, okay, you're fumbling here. Let me help you. I didn't have a lot of time, so I just gave what I had.
Wow. And then what's the difference between the eyes? You talked about different demons or aliens with the eyes. Like, how do you tell?
Alien eyes are just wrong. There's something about them that isn't right. It's there's a distance. It's sort of, I don't know. It's hard to say. They're not right. And you can tell when you look at them that they're not right. Demon eyes are not right, but they're not right with a lot of emotion, whereas aliens are not right without any emotion. So,
okay.
Yeah.
So how does this...
Demons may be malevolent or they may be having a good time messing with you, right?
Okay.
So it just depends on what emotion you get from them. But their emotion versus no emotion is probably the best way to do that. Although you can also get possessions by ghosts that can give you a lot of or no emotions as well. So that's not always a good indicator. You have to, that you have to see on the astral. So.
And then what about people who just have like neurology that leads them to be, you know, socially awkward or like extra emotional or less emotional? Can you sort out those?
Oh, yeah.
Sort of?
Okay. Oh yeah. Yeah. You know, Boston has, which is where this happened, Boston has a remarkable number of people on the autism spectrum. And I think it's just because of the universities that are there, you know, MIT and, you know, the high intellectual capacity universities, which tend to draw a lot of people on the spectrum because, you know, they tend to go together, high intelligence and low social EQ, right? So, I had a lot of experience with people on the spectrum and it's very different, very different. I say it's very different, but it's, I find that, and you know, obviously I'm generalizing and please, if you are on the spectrum, please understand that I'm generalizing and I'm not speaking to you personally. And I do understand that everyone's different. I am going to make an aggregate assumption based on my experience, but in my experience, when you tell someone with autism that they're having a hard time, that there's social stuff that's not right, they are usually like, whoa, yeah, thanks. right? And so in that way, you tend to get similar responses, right? But it's coming from very different places, right? So, you know, this person, the person who is on the spectrum has grown up in this world where they don't fit. And so there's a lot of other pieces to the puzzle for them. There's a frustration that shows up. There's an angst that shows up. There's a that shows up, you know, and you don't get that with aliens because they're new. They haven't had this problem for long. And so you don't get that piece. And people on the spectrum don't have something wrong with their eyes. You know, they're human like everybody else. There's nothing wrong with their eyes.
This is fascinating. where to go next? let's circle back to our the sort of observing patterns.
Yes.
In the siloed world of these different, you know, spiritual schools of thought. Is this a good time to talk about the different categories, the psychic categories, or is that?
I mean, it's not exactly related, but you know, we could talk about that if you want. No,
that's okay. Fine. So it's just two separate. Here. Okay.
Yeah. So, you know, the example I was going to give was I taught Reiki, right? And Reiki is taught in a vacuum from every other energetic practice, and so you know, the idea that Reiki can do no harm is in itself challenging because it sets up the assumption that when you're doing Reiki, you can't do harm, or when you're receiving Reiki, you can't be harmed. But in actuality, the energy of Reiki itself will not do harm, but other energies can be transmitted while doing a Reiki session that could in fact do harm, right? So, you know, to set that expectation up is problematic. Right. And then on top of it, you know, very few Reiki practices that I've heard of, or, you know, I've talked to a lot of Reiki teachers, a lot of Reiki students over the years, and very few of them actually talk about anything about energetic hygiene, you know, how to clear the space before, how to clear the space after, how to protect yourself. I mean, yeah, they do the choke array, protect yourself thing, but it's the way that people engage it is problematic. Because they'll often reach through it to work on somebody and then their hands are not protected. And, you know, but we put it on the hands. It's like, yeah, but not on the back of the hands. Right. And so there's all kinds of ways in which it gets kind of porous and not so good in terms of protection. And then there's the concept of setting a safe container so that nothing else comes in. And yes, some practices will say, put the choke array on the walls. Some of them also include the ceilings and the floors, which is useful because if you don't do it on the ceilings and floors, what was the point of doing it on the walls, right? So, you know, it's inconsistent in its education. And the people who are doing it by rote, not by understanding. So they don't. So if they do the walls, they forget the floor and ceiling, they don't think it's a problem because they didn't realize that they were creating a protection box, right? So that sort of thing, right? So this is...
Yeah, so when I was working in microbiology, they do this little experiment where they put this dye on your hands that's supposed to represent like a pathogen or something that you could have picked up by touching a sink or a, you know, a countertop. And then they have you wash your hands and you wash your hands for 30 seconds, wash them really well. And then we shine a UV light and you can see all the areas of your hands that didn't get cleaned, even though you washed them as thoroughly as you could, you know, like in between the fingers or the fingernails or whatever it might be. And now I'm thinking there's like an analogy here for energetic, because I never... When you're talking about putting your hands through a bubble or something, that's a totally new concept to me. But I had a friend who did a lot of spiritual work and she was like, it was terrible. I ended up getting like in over my head and, you know, having to spend many years like trying to clean things up. So yeah, what do people need to know in terms of like protecting themselves, having a clean space? Hygiene.
That is an entire dissertation. the short answer is you need to have good shields. And if you're an empath, before you can even try to learn how to do shielding properly, you have to learn how to hold your energy properly, because by definition, empaths are shoving their energy field out to the edges of the room or the building or the planet. And therefore, no shield is going to work because everybody's already inside your field by the time you're trying to protect yourself from them. So, you know, that's issue number one, for because most people in the spiritual field are empaths in some fashion. And so you got to learn how to hold your energy field. You got to learn how to shield properly. You got to learn how to protect your space, your physical space, and an additional protection space for the person you're working on. You got to learn how not to be codependent. So you don't take their stuff on and you don't give them your energy. You're actually channeling energy through you rather than giving away your own life force energy. Mm-hmm. And the codependency piece is huge, right? Because then, you know, you're going to give away stuff you shouldn't give away. You're going to take on things that are not yours to take on. And then there's also projection that happens if you haven't done your own work. That's that whole wounded healer concept, right? So, you know, I tell people, I said, look, you are not fit to work on others until you've dealt with your own stuff to the level where when you get triggered, you don't explode, right? If you can go, oof, and then put it away and still stay clear, then you're in a place where you can work on others. But if you can't, you are unsafe to work on others. Because inevitably,
that's the measure.
Yeah, inevitably, somebody will trigger you. Because you're going to draw people to you who have similar issues to you. That's why you can be their healer, is because you've had the same issues, right? You are the person who has walked where they're walking and you know the path out. Well, that's going to work even if you haven't done the work, because the resonance is still there. So you're going to draw in people who have got the same issues as you, and they're going to trigger the crap out of you until you've dealt with yourself, and you are unsafe for them. You'll do damage to them until you have done your stuff, because you'll either get mad at them or you'll get in the way and your upset will get transferred to them energetically, or, you know, you'll try and manage it because you don't want to see the answer in their energy field that you know you need in your energy field. And, you know, all of this stuff comes to play. And that's why we talk about the wounded healer. So, and you have frozen. Oh, there you go. You're back. All right.
Wow. Yeah, this is fascinating. So one thing you were saying was empaths are projecting their field out farther than other people. I'm kind of wondering just about like a standard human, of which we had already said there isn't normal. One, but like, are most people holding their energy naturally? Like, do we have already protections in place for ourselves that just like come with our physicality, or is that something that everybody needs to learn?
So, all right. So there's a couple of things here. So if you go to different countries around the world, you're going to notice that social distance, the distance at which people stand naturally, is very different from country to country. So in Tokyo, for instance, right, and in Japan, the social distance is much closer because they are much closer to each other on a daily basis. They literally have people who shove people into trains to get everybody on the train together. Right? So their social distance space is about a foot, right? And the social distance means something different today now that COVID's happened, but this is the term that was used for decades. But if you go to Latin America, it's about 2 feet. If you go to the US, it's about 3 feet. It's different for every country. Mm-hmm. And that is based on the distance that the average, again, average being a weird name, but the average person holds their energy field. It's the distance at which, you know, it's the point at which your energy fields cross, you know, where they meet, right? Mm-hmm. Now, when you have an empath, that's not true. And so empaths just like bleed all over everybody with their energy field. And if they have a strong personality on top of a big energy field, then everyone will say they're intimidating because their strong energy is on top of everybody that they're surrounding, that's surrounding them. Mm. And so if you get told that you're intimidating a lot and you have a big personality, you're an empath, that's what's happening, right? So empaths also have different relationships. So the way that they hold their energy in relationships, people talk about cording, right? When you're in relationship with somebody, you send energy cords back and forth. Empaths don't do that. Empaths mix energies. We just smoosh it all together, which explains why it's so hard for us to leave our partners, because we're in their energy field and they're in ours. And if we walk away, we've got part of them with us and part of us is gone. And so we're constantly drawn back together again, trying to get our energies back. And so, you know, there's a whole process of filtering your energy out of your partner's energy field and filtering their energy out of yours when you're going to separate for good, or if somebody's crossing over, right?
Interesting. How does someone know if they're an empath?
If you feel what other people feel, if you are overwhelmed by other people's strong emotions, if it's hard for you to be in large crowds, if you have the experience with breaking up with somebody that I just talked about, if you come out of a challenged childhood environment, you know, where you were bullied or your parents were neglectful or narcissistic or alcoholic, almost certainly you're an empath. Because these are defense mechanisms that we create to be able to monitor the room so that we can keep ourselves safe. That's what it's for.
So empaths are often made,
yes,
or trained?
Yes.
Okay, interesting.
Yeah. I mean, they can be born, but it's very rare. They're usually created.
Okay. Fascinating. Yeah. Okay. So anything else we need to know about, like you were talking about, if you're working on someone like with Reiki, putting protection on the walls, anything else we need to know about just protecting ourselves when we're doing energy work?
So what I want to say is what I'm telling you right now is like the very basic understanding of what you need to learn about that you don't know, right? I'm just giving you what you have to know, what you don't know. This is not the answer, right? Because the answer is far more complex than the answer I'm giving you. So don't just take this as gospel. Go find out more about this, because this is a much deeper conversation. But, you know, yes, you want to protect the space. You want to clear the space. You want to, you know, I see a lot with people doing energy healing that they'll just drop the energy on the floor and now they're walking through it and they're going to track it all over their house, right? So if you're pulling energy out of somebody, you got to transmute that energy, or you can drop it on the floor, but you got to make the floor a vortex that takes it away.
Or I've seen that where people make really like a little trash can and they like put the stuff into a little trash chute.
I had a friend who was terrible at remembering that. So she built into her calling to set the space. She built into her calling for help that she called in her angel cleanup crew. And she ended up with these tiny little angels about this big running around with mops and buckets, crazily cleaning up after her everywhere she dropped stuff. Which was perfect for her energy.
That's
it was
amazing.
Exactly who she was. But energy is only limited by your imagination. So it can be anything you want. And this is the foundation that I start people with when I talk to them about magic, is look, magic is focused intent put into action. You know, and that's really all it is. And so nothing limits magic except your belief structures and your imagination. And so when you realize that, the questioning of your assumptions, the questioning of your beliefs becomes paramount if you ever want to do significant work in the magical realm. Because that's your limiting factor. Yeah.
Now I'm just imagining like having a little cleanup crew following me around.
Well, she invoked them and then devoked them. So, you know, or, you know, evoked them. So evoke means to call into the space. Invoke means to call into you, right? So she evoked them into the space and then she devoked them. She released them when she was done with the cleaning. So this is another beginner challenge that I see happen a lot, is people will set a sacred container and go, oh, it feels so good in here, I'm just going to leave it up. Don't do that. Don't do that. Because every time you leave it, it holds some of your energy. It's going to bring you back. It's going to drain your energy field. It's going to make you cranky and bitchy and ugh, right? You don't want that. So, you know, wards are what it's called when you set a protection on your house. Those are a very specific energetic construct that you do not stay attached to. And therefore, they can stay up in perpetuity. But sacred space containers are meant to be temporary. And they are not meant to be left. So you can't walk away from one and expect to not have repercussions. Kathy and I have a funny story about that. We were running a program, and we have a habit of, you know, we'll set the container before we set the container with the group, right? Mm-hmm. And so we had finished the work. It was the end of the weekend with this group, and we had closed the group container, and we forgot to close our container because we were waiting for everybody to leave. And that process took like 45 minutes to an hour, and we were starving by the time they left. And so we were like, we got to go eat, right? So we didn't pull the container down because we didn't think about it. And so we went down the four floors to get to the ground level. Mm-hmm. We walked out of the building and we walked up a block to get to the restaurant. The whole time Kathy was bitching at me. She's like, I thought you said this was close. This is so far. I'm so tired. I'm like, I know, I'm so tired. I can't wait for this food. And we sat down, and it was like walking through molasses to get there. And we sat down and we got our drinks and we were waiting for the food. And I looked at her and went, we didn't pull the circle down. And she went, oh my God, that's exactly what's wrong here. And we pulled the circle down from where we were, because it's an intention. You can pull it down from anywhere. You can set it up from anywhere. And we immediately felt better. Hmm. Immediately felt better. And the walk back was like, she's like, oh my God, it is that close. And I said, yes, I know. But it felt so far when we were trying to walk away from our magical circle. So
interesting. And what about having, I'm thinking about having dinner parties or house guests, like people that come into your space that you've like set the way you want it. Is there anything like, should you smudge people when they come over, or what do you do to keep your...
Depends on how rude you want to be. You know, some people will take offense to that. You know, I set my door to peel off anything I don't want in my house, and it can wait at the door. And then they can pick it up on their way out. It's kind of like if your guests show up wearing shoes covered in dog poop, you're not going to let them walk in the door with it, right? It's like if your energy is carrying energetic dog poop, it can wait at the door. It's not coming in.
How do you set that up with your door?
I just create a sieve that screens it off.
Is that something you have to maintain?
How do you do anything in magic? What did I say? What is magic? Focus intent.
Is that something you have to maintain, or you just set it up and forget it? Or
I set it and forget it. Not my problem. I you know, you may want to set an automatic clearing for anything that they decide to leave behind. That's got to go at the end of the day, but otherwise not so much.
The shaman that I work with, he basically won't let anybody into his house unless he's already been working with you for quite some time, you know, because he doesn't want to have to clean up anything after.
Yeah.
Afterwards.
And that's why I set it on my door. It's because I don't want him in my house either. So I have it set on my doors. It's like you're entitled to have whatever you want on you. It just can't come in my house.
Interesting. Is there anything that could overpower that? Like anything gets through your sieve?
Nothing so far.
Okay.
Yeah.
Like no lurkers or anything.
No. The only thing that managed to get through once was a cursed object, because I had not cued it for that. And it's not sentient, right? It's mm-hmm. a curse. It's not sentient. So I had built it for everything other than that. Now cursed objects are included in my wards. but I did get a cursed object in the house, and I was like, what the heck? Why does this not feel good? It was a gift from a friend who had, you know, I had loved this sculpture in his house and he had loved it. And when he moved into a tiny house, he gifted it to me, but he didn't know that his ex-wife had cursed it because he loved it. Oh. And so when he gifted it to me, I got the curse with it. So that was fun to have to clear. But yeah.
Did what was the curse doing?
I was just messing with everything. It was doing damage to my business. It was doing damage to my health. It was not good.
Wow. And yeah. Did the woman know she cursed it?
Oh, sure. Yeah. She's a witch. I know she knew.
Okay.
Yeah. She's a fairy witch. She knew. Yeah. She was pissed on her way out the door and she cursed it.
Wow. So. What did you clear the curse off or did you get rid of the object?
No, I destroyed the object. I took the object outside and destroyed the object. So.
Is that the only way to get rid of a curse?
That was the only way to get rid of this one. She's badass. So, you know, she knew what she was doing. And without destroying it, it was not going to go anywhere. I tested a bunch of different ways. And I was like, no, this is anchored to the existence of this thing. Until this thing ceases to exist, it doesn't go away.
Sounds like a Horcrux.
Yeah, kind of. But except that it didn't have a person attached to it. It was a curse.
Man, there's a lot. There's a lot of new things you're introducing me to.
There's a lot. Yeah.
Tell me some more wild stories. Like, what are some of your other, like, you've been in other hairy situations?
I haven't told this one yet. So I had a working circle. This was back in the late 90s. I had a working circle of five of us. And they came to my house on Yule, which is the darkest night of the year, right? And I lived across the street. I lived in Groton, Connecticut. I lived across the street from the Fort Griswold Memorial, which was the site of a Revolutionary War massacre.
Okay.
And my house had a ghost. And it was, you know, one of the soldiers. And I had a good relationship with the soldier, you know. So that's neither here nor there to the story, but I just thought I'd mention it. That's a funny story unto itself, but we'll talk about that later. But they came over on Yule, and we all decided in our stupidity to go over to the Revolutionary War massacre site and play around with energy on the darkest night of the year. So there was a secret entrance into the fort that was this little tunnel that curved twice so that you didn't see light from either side, right? And we were walking through said tunnel. I was so my friend who was a shaman was at the front. I was next in line. His girlfriend was behind me, and behind her was two of our friends who were married. And we were walking through holding on to each other because it was pitch dark, pitch black, couldn't see a thing.
Yeah.
And my friend at the front said that he imagined opening a portal. I'm like, I didn't warn any of us, just imagined it, which of course, when you're magical, happens, right? And so he imagined walking through a portal. And we all walked through the portal, and he thought, you know, we're all connected. It'll be fine. We'll all go together. It'll be good. And what happened was the guy at the back of the line stumbled, and his wife let go to grab him to help him to keep him from falling. And so the three of us walked through, and the two of them didn't.
Whoa.
And he got possessed. And this we opened this rift from which dark elves came flying out at insane speeds. And no, that didn't happen then. That's later. Sorry. So he got possessed. And so we come out the other side, and the three of us don't know what's happened. Four of us have no idea what's going on because the guy at the front never told anybody what he'd done. And so, you know, he's sitting there thinking we're all in this altered space, and three of us are, and the other two are not, and one is possessed. And
but physically, you're all there together.
We're all physically there together, but energetically, we're in different spaces. And so the guy who's possessed starts doing this casting. He's like, I have to set them free. I have to set free the soldiers who are stuck here, la, 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 la. And he starts focusing on what he swore to us later. He thought he was looking at the American flag that was flying. And in actuality, he was looking off in the distance in a different direction and was opening a portal to the Dark Elves. So they came flying out as he's sitting there doing this thing. And we're like, what's going on? I don't understand what's happening. And suddenly we're like, oh shit. Right. And we're like, ah, and we're trying to shove these things back in and get them all settled and blah, blah, blah. And they ran rampant all over us. We didn't have any control over it. And we finally realized that he had a problem and we got him depossessed. And then we went back to my house for respite because, you know, protection, right. It was protected. And the Dark Elves are swarming the house and we're just like, oh, you know, God, what's going on? And of course, this is the moment when they decide they're going to drive home. And I'm like, I live here. And they're like, well, but we're tired. We need to go home. We got to work in the morning. And I'm like, I live here. But I live here. But my house. And they're like, you'll be fine. I'm like, WTF, right?
So, are Dark Elves like little like troublemakers, pixies, or are they like malevolent, or what are they doing?
So, elves are dispassionate, and they would make the perfect lawyer, right? They're all about contracts and all about the signing, and there is no emotion. Da 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 da. It's just what it is. Dark elves are that on steroids with bad intent. And so, yeah, it was not good. And they were not small. And so these things ran amok for about a week until they could come back down. And then we planned a ritual to pull them all back in. And the same guy who got possessed, he's part troll. So he knew how to pull up that energy, you know, that dark energy. And so he made himself the bait and drew in all of these things. He built this huge charge of energy up with all this energy that they would find very attractive. And we drew them all back to the space. And the rest of us ran around looking like idiots because we had been idiots. So we figured that they would think we were idiots. And so if we looked like idiots, then they would disregard us. And they did. Right. And we literally, okay. I mean, when I say we looked like idiots, we had a song that we did and everything that was, you know, really bad and out of tune. And, you know, we were just like, we had, don't pay any attention to me. I'm just an idiot. Right. And while he was drawing them all in, we were surrounding the encampment and creating a barrier and then shoving them back through. So yeah, it was a nightmare. It was not good.
Wow. Talk about, you know, cleaning up a mess.
Oh my God. Well, but at least we cleaned up our mess. Right. I know a lot of people who have messes like that who go, I don't know how to fix it. I'm not going to do it. Right. I'm just going to move. Or, you know, they summon demons to their house and they don't know how to get rid of them. And so they just move and leave it for somebody else. Oh, geez. It's like, really? You what? Yeah. But they do it. They do it. I've cleaned up a lot of those houses.
So you're like a Ghostbuster.
I was. I don't actively do that work anymore. I refer that to a couple of friends of mine. But yeah, it's special.
Wow, this is super fun.
Yeah, I call this magical storytelling time, right? It's like, here's all the stupid stuff we did and how we paid the price, right?
Yeah. It's definitely making me feel cautious. I want to be a little more cautious.
The entire first year of my podcast was, here's how not to blow yourself up, right? Don't do this. You'll blow yourself up. Don't do this. You'll not. You'll shoot your eye out. I hate that movie, but it's appropriate in this context. So, you know, magic is like that. You have to understand that there are rules, just like anything else. And magic is a nuclear power plant. You don't walk in and just start turning knobs and expect to not have things blow up.
Yeah, like first year of chemistry class. Like, don't mix these two things.
Right. Right. And, you know, I mean, yes, it's magic is intention, but there are all kinds of unintended consequences that can come from setting an intention badly.
Say that again.
There are all kinds of unintended consequences that can come from setting your intention badly. So, classic example, a friend of mine said, "Ooh, I want to live in a magical house." And I said, "Take it back." She was like, "What?" I said, "Take it back." She said, "What do you mean?" I said, "Well, I said, do you really want to live in a house where the hallways are a different length every time you step into them, where the doorways go to random magical realms that you don't know if you can get back from, that your toilet could actually be a gateway to another realm in and of itself, where things could come flying out of it at any moment, where your house may wink into and out of existence on this plane? Do you really want to live there?" She was like, "Oh my God, no." And I'm like, "That's what I mean. Take it back." Right.
So she probably had some idea of what a magical house she wanted. So you're suggesting
it was a very amorphous idea that was undefined. And if you leave something undefined, the universe will fill in the gaps. Mm. And that gap filling could be far more extreme than you really want.
So be specific.
Be specific. Yeah. There's a reason I write excellent contracts. I actually wrote a contract for a client situation that I was doing, and I ran it by my attorney, and I said, you know, what did I miss? And he's a contract law attorney. He does litigation all day, every day for 15 years. He's like, "You didn't miss anything. I could take this to court and it would stand up." He said, "You want a job writing contracts?" I'm like, "Nope, I do magic. I'm good." Get enough of that. Right. It's understanding what are the parameters? How could things go horribly wrong? You know, what could mean something I don't mean it to mean? Because especially in English, the words mean multiple things. Right. So
yeah, I'm just starting to learn variations. That the legal system uses a lot of like magic words and spells and stuff in it. what do you have to say about that?
Well, lawyers are designed to be magicians. They really are, you know. They would be hermetic magicians. You know, often they're hermetic magicians where they do hermetic magic is high ceremonial magic with very specific spells and very specific wordings. And they've been done the same way generation after generation. And when you cast those spells, you're drawing on the energy of everyone who has ever cast that spell over time. You're building into the morphic field of that spell and you're drawing on that energy. Mm. I am not a hermetic magician. I am a chaos magician. I pull from the primordial ooze of potentiality and form things into being from that. And so therefore I can be a little more loosey-goosey, but not as loosey-goosey as you might think because of the need to have the intention really fully formed.
Are there other types of magic besides hermetic and chaos?
Oh, yeah. there's all kinds. I use hermetic and chaos because they are almost polar opposites. But, you know, I mean, the Gardnerians have their own version. The Alexandrians have their own version. The Enochians have their own version. I mean, the Kabbalists have their own version. I mean, every tradition has its own version of magic. They are all related in some way, but they're all their own version. They're facets of the diamond, like we talked about at the beginning. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Man, I just when I thought I had learned a bunch of stuff in the last 10 years, I'm realizing still a baby, still a beginner. Maybe we could hop over and do, because I kind of want to.
You want to talk about the psychic abilities thing? Or you want to do the reading?
Yeah, I want to showcase some of your abilities that we've been referring to. But so, and in particular, you helped, you participated in the last telepathy launch that we did, which was fantastic. First time we ran that program, it exceeded our expectations in a lot of ways, but this time I'd really love to, make it bigger. It's something that I really feel like, is an innate human skill, telepathic, psychic abilities, remote viewing. I had no idea 3 years ago. I had no idea it was so easy to learn. And it's very like when you see somebody get it for the first time, or when like, I still get a kick out of like saying what other people are thinking. And they're like, you read my mind. I'm like, oh, really? I thought it was my own thought. And they're like, no, it was my thought. I'm like, how do we know whose thought it is? But it's still really fun. But if you could give us any reading about how we could optimize this offering for people, that would be fantastic. Optimizing the launch or the delivery of the program itself, or just...
Okay. Yeah. I don't know what the content of the program is, so that's going to be a little more difficult. But I do want to give you my perspective on telepathy, which might have some insight for you. So telepathy is an extension of empath abilities. So the downside of being an empath is that everybody's inside your energy field, and you're all over everybody else's field, and you've got all the problems that we talked about, right? The upside, though, is that when you learn how to manage your energy field, you can just touch your energy field to somebody else's, and you can pick up on a huge amount of information, which you're already doing right now. You're just doing it by covering them in your energy, right? And when you extend this, when you work with this muscle, because it's a muscle like anything else, when you work with the muscle, it strengthens. And so you go from being able to feel emotions to being able to sense thoughts. And it's a combination of that. Now, there are multiple ways to get to different places, right? Multiple ways to get to the same place. So I see from the look on your face that that's not the path that you're taking. There's the other pathway is to treat telepathy like remote viewing, right? And to send your intentions into somebody else's head to try and pull the information out. I had that happen to me once. It was unpleasant because it was not with permission. And it was before I had my shields up. And I was going to do a psychic reading, and this woman came in behind me into the building. I didn't even realize that somebody had walked in, and she started rooting around in my head. Is she any good? Is she any good? I don't know. Do I want to get a reading from her? I don't know. And I turned around. I went, yes, I'm very good. Thank you very much. Please stop that. And she was like, what? I was like, get out of my head. It's very rude. And she was like, she had no idea she was doing it. Right. But she was treating telepathy like remote viewing, where she was sending her consciousness into my brain. That would never happen today. I have my shields up. I'm solid. So you had asked if everybody had protection. And when you pull your energy field in, and your energy field is where it's meant to be, and you're dense and you're solid because that's what you're meant to be, you have inherent protections. But when you're an empath and you've spread your energy out, your energy is diffused, and it's much harder to protect yourself, not just from the people in the room, but in general, because your energy isn't solid enough, right? So I do telepathy through my empath abilities. And, my husband and I read each other's minds constantly. I mean, I'll think something and he'll do it, or vice versa. He'll think something and I'll say it.
We do this every married couple's dream.
Yeah, well, we do it constantly. So, it's a function of the empath abilities, right? We're really connected. We have absolute trust, and therefore we don't have any barriers up between each other. We know that, we're good with whatever you see, right? And that's the differential. That's the next level of empath ability, is the telepathy piece. So that's my angle on it. Mm-hmm. So it looks to me like you're probably doing more the remote viewing style
Yeah, it's interesting. From a scientific angle, that's one of my questions is exactly like how the information gets processed into our awareness, like what the pathway is. So you're saying it could either be energy fields touching and that information is transferred between,
Yes.
and when we're talking about telepathy, we're talking about like I'm a consciousness unit, you're a consciousness unit, and we're just sharing information.
It could be through direct sharing. It could be through collective unconscious sharing too, because there are ways in which we get information through the collective unconscious as well.
Yeah, which is really interesting because one thing we've noticed is like we'll do an exercise where it's like, what's in this envelope with our students? And if you get enough people all guessing the same wrong thing, it creates this collective agreement about what's actually in the envelope. And it's like, then other people start picking up on that collective agreement about what it is, but that's not actually it. And then it's really helpful to get the person that disagrees, like if anybody got something way different than what everybody's saying, let's hear that. And then a lot of times that could be the most sort of high accuracy reading.
Yeah, well, and you've also got the morphic field to be concerned about too, because anytime you have a group of people, that group of people creates a morphic field, and that morphic field is basically the aura of the group, right? The collective aura of the group, and that morphic field has its own intelligence, right? And that's where you get mob mentality from, is from the morphic field of the group mentality. And so when we do coaching with people or when we do retreats with people, inevitably the people show up who have similar issues, right? And the morphic field becomes the combination of those issues that we work through together, right? Like I'll do sound healing. I'm doing some sound healing locally just to keep my hands in. And inevitably there's a common theme for the group that I'm doing the sound healing for, right? And so that common theme is the thing that I end up doing the general group healing on before I do the individual pieces, right? And so when you're doing that in a telepathy environment, you're not only dealing with, or a remote viewing in this case, because that's what you were talking about, you're not only dealing with what is in the envelope, but you're also dealing with the collective belief structure of what is in the envelope, right? And that's that energetic that you're talking about. And so as each person makes their decision about what they think is in that envelope, it impacts the morphic field. And so this is the other reason why in traditional shaman training, there's almost always a shunning that they put a shaman through. And the reason that they do that is because they want the shaman to be able to stand up to the tribe when there is an important thing that the tribe needs to know that the tribe doesn't want to know. And they need them to have gone through what it is like to be kicked out of the tribe so that they will not be afraid of it and will not stand in the way of their message.
I just realized that happened to me recently. I think the shaman that I work with engineered that for me recently. Oh, that's so fascinating. Whoa. Okay, interesting. The context is like good family friend is like a surprising disagreement of something I thought we were aligned about, and it was like keeping me up at night, and I was like, oh my gosh, this is terrible, but I have to like hold my truth about this. Okay, really interesting. And it was one of those things I was like, where did this even come from? Are you up for doing a little reading on this project, this course endeavor?
Okay.
Okay.
So I have permission to enter your energy field for the purposes of the reading?
Yes.
Okay. Give me a second. Okay. So the first thing I get as I'm coming into your field is that it feels like the launch is sort of off here, off to the side, right? It's not actually right in front of you. It feels like it's kind of hanging off in the ethers, and therefore it's not getting your full attention and your full focus. And it feels like you're it's like the first one you did was kind of a, oh, let's try this and see how it goes. And you're still in that same energy. Instead of being fully aligned behind it and going, this is what I'm doing. This is where I'm going. This is what's happening. And so you really need to pull the energy down out of the ethers, out of the, it would be nice and this would be fun, and into the, I'm making this happen. I'm calling this into being. I'm calling the people who are meant to be here to come to this event, to learn these skills for the betterment of themselves and the world, right? Boom, that is an intention, right? Bang. And so the, you know, right now it's sort of like, yeah, I'm going to run this class. And that's not where this is, right? You want to bring it down to bang, this has an impact on the world, right? So what else? Hold on.
Would that have anything to do with that it's in, it's like a month and a half in the future when it starts, or?
That's way too close to be in this space right now. That time frame is way too close to still have it hanging in the ethers. You need to be right in. You should have started this about, you know, 2 weeks ago. The focus.
Okay.
You got to give people time to feel the calling and come in and make the space in their calendars and do the whole thing, right? Yeah, it's way too far out or way too close in for you to still be in sort of like, oh, over here mode, right?
Oh, interesting. Okay.
Yeah. So, okay, let me see. The affiliates you have lined up look good. That feels good. In terms of, I'm gonna pull this down and put it in place as though you have done that, so that I can see what it looks like once you do that. Because right now it's just sort of loosey goosey. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. It's on fire if you will bring it into center focus. So I'm literally seeing like a drag car leaving flames in the tires and tire treads on the ground as it takes off and goes flying down the road. So
that sounds
you've got
good.
To bring the focus, right? You have to bring it out from up here and down to here and really own that focus and that intent. And that's going to be the biggest challenge, I think, because there's a way in which you've been doing the scientific exploration, and that has at its foundation and a distance. It's in observer mode, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so there's a distance when you do that level of exploration because you're not actually in it as much as you're watching yourself be in it. Right. And so there's a level of experiential process that gets lost in the analysis of it. And so the piece here is about stepping out of scientific knowledge and into a state of owning your power and utilizing that power to create the reality you're calling into being. And that's a very different space than the way your head works right now. It's a space that doesn't exist in the head. Okay. You mm-hmm. gotta be out of your head to do this. You've gotta be in your body and in your energy field. Your head is only used to formulate the intention, and it's only very lightly used to formulate that intention. Your energy field is holding the vast majority of the intention to do this work. And so what you're doing, and I'll do it now so that you can watch my energy field as I do this, is you're coalescing your energy and you're pulling it into being, and you're saying, okay, I am pulling up all of my energy right now, and I'm collectively creating a reality within myself utilizing the energy from the universe and the energy from the earth, because the universe provides soul energy and the earth provide it grounds it to the earth into reality here, right? So we're taking it from the liminal into reality, right? So astral liminal reality. And so I'm going to go pull the energy together. And then I'm going to go, this is creating a reality in which these people come together and they learn a skill that will change their lives forever and will be of service to the earth going forward for generations to come.
Ooh.
Okay.
Gives me chills.
Yeah, I got them too. My arms are goosebumped. I don't know if you can see that.
Oh, yeah.
Goosebumped all over the place. Yeah. That's how you do that.
Okay.
I just did it. I did it for you. So I've got a support system for you there, but you're going to need to do it yourself because you can fritter this energy because it's not yours. Right. So I can do it for you to a certain extent, but if you don't step into the lane, then it will dissipate because you're not engaging it. You're not connecting it. I created the pathway. You have to connect it to your program. Right. And you do that by stepping into that lane, into that energetic.
This is exciting and
intimidating.
Intimidating, yeah. it's like the theme for my year so far. Everything is like you can't think your way through this. Like you have to just like leap off the cliff.
Yes.
Knowing it's like, oh my gosh. So one of the in this metaphysical quest. I did a runes reading,
mm-hmm.
and so the first rune that came up was the blank rune, and she was like, nobody's mm-hmm. ever pulled the blank rune on the first one before, and it was like, you basically have to just like act on complete faith, and
throw your ass to the wind, baby.
Yeah, it's for I still label myself as like someone who's scientifically trained.
Yeah, you're gonna have to let go of that definition if you're gonna keep walking down this path. Yeah, because that definition is holding you onto the path, the past path. So there are two paths to enlightenment. Okay, there's the masculine path and the feminine path, and both are important, but you are crossing over from the masculine to the feminine. Okay, and so the masculine path is the path of understanding, of knowledge. It's the path of light in the yin yang, right? So you have light and darkness, right? Great spirit and great mystery. I love that definition best because it has the least amount of angst around the Christian hullabaloo around darkness and evil and whatever. Because it's not that. It's great spirit and great mystery. It's thought and experience. Okay. So from the heart chakra up, you're doing the path of the masculine path. You're doing the light part of the path, which you can understand and you can get knowledge of, and you can do all those things. And it's about stripping away and stripping away and stripping away everything that isn't you until you become nothing and you become one with everything. That is the masculine path to enlightenment. The feminine path from the heart chakra down is the path of great mystery, of experience, of beingness in your embodied state. And the heart chakra is the liminal space between masculine and feminine. So if you don't have your heart chakra open, you cannot make the transition. Okay. And so the heart chakra down is the path of experience. So it's not about stripping away. It's about accepting and receiving without judgment, with compassion, without a need to change anything. You accept and receive everything until you become everything and become one with everything. That is the feminine path. Now, when you take the two and you put them together, now you're an enlightened being. When you can do both at the same time and have it not be a paradox, now you're an enlightened being. Okay. So you are crossing over. You're in that transition. You've been doing this for long enough. You're in that transition between the masculine and the feminine energy. What you cannot do is go into the darkness and look for the light switch. Okay. You cannot hope to understand your experiences. You have to experience them. You have to be with them. Allow them to work upon you. Allow them to be what they are. Accept them for what they are without having to analyze them, without having to turn it into an understanding of some kind, right? But instead to just allow the experience to live within you and to inform you on a cellular body-based level. That is the pathway that stands before you. And if you hold on to your self-definition as being a man of science, you're going to not make the transition well, because it will force you into your identity, will force you away from the experiential path.
That makes total sense. Yeah, interesting. Yeah, I was just talking yesterday on another podcast about how he was talking about hopping timelines, but like you have to basically like throw away the identity if you want to fully inhabit the new timeline and not get sucked back to the old one.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's the hardest thing. I mean, that's the work that I do at the deepest level, is I do identity shifting work, because who we believe ourselves to be is the limit of who we can become. Right. So if we can learn to release our belief structure about who we think we are, we can become anything.
This is great. This is not even what I was expecting, but it's super helpful.
Good. I don't know what you were expecting. I didn't expect anything in particular. I just report what I get.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Yeah, that's the sum total of what they have to tell you on that. That's the important pieces for that part of the reading. I mean, obviously we could go into greater depth. We talked about this before we got on the call, that you know, the full process typically takes about 90 minutes to 2 hours. So yeah. But that's sufficient for this piece. Yeah.
Okay, a couple of questions. First, who is they? Is that like my spirit guides? Your guides.
My guides. Yeah.
Okay. They probably know my guides too.
Yeah.
They know each other, hang out.
Everybody talks. My support staff, right?
My people talk to your people.
Right. People think of their guides as being, oh, I have to do what they tell me. And it's like, no. You're doing the hard job by being on the planet. They are your support staff. Please get that dynamic right. And then you won't be intimidated to ask them for help.
Cool. And so you would, doing a business energetic reading, like an in-depth, is one of your offerings, or how does that fit into the context with like the work that you do?
So, I work with coaches and business owners and energy healers and, you know, spiritual teachers and things like that. And I work with them on issues of their own personal growth and development, the growth and development of their business, and their personal evolution, right? So the energetic work. So, you know, I teach skills around that and courses around that sort of thing. But that's the general premise. So there comes a point, right? And you're at this stage right now, right? Where you've done enough work that all the spaces that are good for the beginners are useless for you. You're like, yeah, I've been there, done that, and I'm bored, yawn, where do I go, right? And oftentimes you'll go places, and especially if you've had any education in, you know, setting containers and things like that, you'll go places where you're like, I'm going here to do my work, I'm not on duty, and suddenly the facilitator is doing something extremely dangerous energetically, or, you know, extremely messed up from a psychological perspective or whatever, you know, and I'm not saying that these people are malicious, just that they're uneducated, right? And suddenly you're on duty because you can't allow it to happen to you. And if it's bad enough, sometimes you can't allow it to happen to others, right? You're just like, oh, I can't, right? And So, you know, it becomes very difficult to find a space where you can do your work and trust that you're not going to have to be on duty or that you're, I went to a container once that was designed for beginners and I did my work for years in that container, but I had to punch through the roof of the container, do my work outside of the container and come back down because they had placed a limiter on the amount of energy that could be done within the container to keep the newbie safe, which was a completely reasonable thing for them to do. But I'd have to punch through and then come back down and heel it over and you know make sure that nobody came with me that wasn't prepared to go and, you know, all of this. And I finally just said, you know what, I can't work in this container anymore. I did that for like one time and I was just like, no, I'm done. I had to punch through to get my work done. I can't. So it's disrespectful to the container to continue to do that once you know that that's the case. And so this is the type of thing that I'm talking about that we run into as we get further along in our process and it becomes more difficult to find a place to do your work. I'm the place you come.
Cool. So your business is set up to serve advanced learners.
Yeah. I mean, I have a beginner program as well. It's run by my coaches. So they run the beginner program. It starts with Inner Peace 101, where you're getting your mental, emotional, and energetic safety in line. So you're dealing with fear and anxiety and worry and dread and self-doubt and inner and outer judgments and building a foundation of self-support and courage. That's the beginning stage for that. And then the second stage is solidifying your energetic container, learning how to claim your space and set your boundaries, own your power, internalize your sense of value, and learn how to love yourself. That will create a solid container in which you can do your work. For the shadow work piece, which is the third piece, which is all about digging out your buttons and your triggers, learning how to do good self-inquiry, learning how to identify what your gifts are, and learning how to build the muscles of those gifts and develop them over time and become a safe space to do work with others, right? And then from there, we work with people on the coaching path, the healer path, the psychic development path, the teacher path.
I have a friend who was just left me a message. Like, she's like, she wants to find a mastermind. She's like, I just applied to this one, but I probably won't even do it because it's just like, she's like, I keep looking for the right coach. Maybe I should connect you guys. And I also, another friend was telling me like, he's a coach and he wants containers where he doesn't have to be the lead coach. And he's always like, people are like, oh, hey, you're here. Do you want to lead this session? He's like, no.
Yes. That's exactly what I'm talking about. That's exactly what happens to you as you get further along. People are like, oh, you're the most elder in the room. You've got to do it. It's like, well, where do you go to do your work? Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So you've got this like three part progression where it's like getting yourself on a solid foundation.
Yes. That's the undergrad work.
Okay.
And then the graduate level work is doing the deeper level process. And that process is more custom, right? Because each person has to them and where they want to go and how they like to learn. And so inherently this level of process is customized. And so I do it in group settings because I think it's super valuable to be in a group container, especially with people who are at your level, because the morphic field, it informs everything and it helps to move things forward. And, you know, if you don't have something to work on that week, you can learn from something somebody else is working on, right? That's always the case. Mm-hmm. And so it's very, you know, it's small group environment. So, you know, 6-8 people in a group. And we're doing custom work. So, you know, you tell me where you are when you come in, what you want to work on, what's important to you. I do a full business energy scan and we do an assessment. It's basically a mini VIP day over the course of several sessions where we're looking at, you know, sacred contracts and, you know, ancestral line issues, past life issues. Are there any curses going on? You know, we run the gamut for everything that could be impacting you. And then we make a plan for your path. So, yeah.
Cool. And there was tell me about shadow work. I think I saw you had like a quiz on your website about Are you ready for shadow work?
Yes.
And why is that like the third phase of the progression that you were talking about?
Yeah, that's a great question, because so many people try to jump straight into shadow work and they end up re-traumatizing themselves or getting nowhere. Because if you've got good self-preservation skills, you will not allow yourself to go there. If you have crappy self-preservation skills, you will re-traumatize yourself if you don't do the previous work ahead of time. Mm-hmm. So the reason it's the third one in the path is that the first step is getting mental, emotional, and energetic safety. Because until you can do that, you literally do not have the bandwidth to do anything, because your brain is constantly in fear mode, fear and reaction mode. Ah! The world is going to come to an end. Where's the other shoe that's going to drop? Oh my God, somebody's upset with me. I've got to have this argument in my head with someone before I talk to them. I got to have the argument like 20 times, and then I won't say anything until I'm ready to blow up. And then I've got to blow up, and then I feel bad. Now I'm a terrible person, right? All of that la, 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 la is in the way of being able to do anything. And so the first program clears that, and it gives you peaceful mind time to be able to do other work. The second part of the program solidifies your sense of self, because as empaths, we came up through challenged environments that stretched us, and they caused us to have to grow and stretch to survive. But it also created tears and holes in your identity, your sense of self. Mm-hmm. And, you know, in many cases, we were not allowed to be an individual. We had to be a reflection of whoever it was the people that were problematic for us wanted us to be, right? And so the second part of the path is to figure out who you are and to solidify that sense of self and know that you have a right to take up space in your own life. Know that you have a right to set boundaries with others and enforce them. Know that you have a right to your own power and your ability to wield it. Know that you have a right to see yourself as valuable, even when you're doing nothing for anyone else. And you have a right to care for and love yourself as well as, if not better than, the way you care for and love others. And all of those pieces together solidify your sense of self, your sense of who you are, and your energetic container that holds your ability to do energy work, magic, right? And once you've done those two pieces, then you have the solid foundation on which to stand to go and look at the parts of yourself that you're not happy with, to go and look at the parts of yourself, of your experience that were traumatic. But until you have those other two pieces formed, you're not in a position to do the work. And so many things out there are saying, oh, go do your shadow work. You need to do your shadow work. And I'm like, only if you're ready for your shadow work should you go and mm-hmm. do your shadow work. Because if you're not, then you're going to set yourself up to fail one way or another. Because you either won't get it done at all, or you're going to hurt yourself more. And then you're going to think, well, I can't be fixed. Mm-hmm. And so if you've had that experience, if you're listening to this and you've had that experience, it's not that you can't be fixed. Okay. First thing is, you're not broken. Let's start with that. The true you isn't broken. Your perceptions are skewed. And when I say skewed, I mean, they're twisted upside down and sideways right now. And that's okay. But, you know, I talk about it like being like you're on a skateboard, right? You're on a skateboard because you learned how to be. You learn how to see the world from the ground level, sideways. You're on the ground like this, sideways, and somebody's foot was on your head. And they would turn your head whichever way they wanted your head to go. And that's how you grew up learning how to see the world. And eventually, you know, you managed to shove their boot off your head or not, depending on where you are. But now you realize you have to be able to move. So you've grabbed a skateboard and you've put it under your face. And now you've got your head down and you got you're on your elbows and your knees and you're crawling through the world with your face on a skateboard, hoping against hope that no one's going to kick you in the head, step on your hands, step on your feet, or kick you in the butt, which happens all the time. And nobody knows that they did it because they don't realize you're on a skateboard. They think you're walking upright like they are. And so your feelings are getting hurt and they're confused because they don't understand what's going on. And then, God forbid, there's a crack in the sidewalk. And now you know that the minute that the wheels hit the sidewalk crack, you're going to get your face all skidded up on that skateboard. And the minute the back wheels hit, your face is going to get skidded again. And you're like flipping out because there's a crack in the sidewalk. And you're like, there's a crack in the sidewalk. And everybody's going, yeah, there's a crack in the side. What is the problem with the crack at the sidewalk? And you're going, but there's a crack in the sidewalk. And they don't understand. Okay. Because they're not on skateboards. Okay. Your job in that scenario is get off the skateboard before you go looking for all the things that you hate about yourself. Right. You're already in a position where you're going to get beaten up on a daily basis because you're on the skateboard. Right. That's what the first two programs do, is they get you off the skateboard.
This is a great, analogy. Can you look at somebody and just tell like where they're at in the progression?
Some, you know, it depends on the person and energetically where they are. You know, there are certain indicators that give me information, but yeah, I mean, the challenge is, and this is why it's so important to do the custom work at the more advanced level, there is no curriculum in the spiritual world. Everybody's learning little facets, and they're teaching what they know about their little facets that they've learned from other people who learned about their little facets. And there's no primary curriculum. And so you're learning, you know, you read 16 books and you watch 150 videos and you listen to 20 podcasts and you're off taking classes here and there and whatever. And you don't know how it all stitches together. And so therefore you don't know when you've missed a core foundational piece. Right. And inevitably, when I'm working with coaches, inevitably, if they're stuck, it's because they missed a foundational piece somewhere. And so part of my job is to identify what the foundational pieces are that are missing and fill in those gaps so that they can then build up, because you can only build up so far if you've got a hole in the middle of your foundation. Right. And so that's part of the work, and that's why we do it. So, you know, because there's so many pieces and parts. I mean, I literally sat down the other day and added up. I have 502 pieces of content in those first two programs.
Well, okay.
Yeah. So there's so many pieces, right? I've been studying this stuff for 48 years, right? So I started 25 years ago, I started writing down everything I was doing, everything I had done to that date that I could remember that worked. And then from there forward, every time I would find something that worked for me, I would write it down. And so this is a lifelong study that has been documented over the course of 25 years of what works.
The scientist, right? In me is like, yes.
Yeah, I know. I knew you'd love that, right? So, but that's why, right? And so, you know, yes, I can sort of get a general feel of where somebody is in their process, but, you know, I can't tell you every single piece that's missing unless we sit down and start doing. That's what the energy scans are for, is we get a sense of where somebody is on a regular, just a personal energy scan. And my coaches do those scans. That gives us an idea of where you are in your process, right? So we go in, we look at the chakras. I did like 3,000 of these personal energy scans like a decade ago. And what I discovered was that, you know, it was all people on a spiritual path, and everybody had some of these blocks that I discovered. There were 38 common blocks, and everybody had some of them. Nobody had all of them, but everybody had some of them. And, you know, so these are the things that we focus on. And then, you know, we open up to spirit and say, is there anything else I need to know? But, you know, that's from 3,000, you know, yeah, doing 3,000 wow. scans and then seeing what the common themes were, right? Talk about looking for patterns, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, that's the general premise. And, you know, I wrote my book about those too, and the spiritual journey. So,
oh, cool. What's your book called?
It's called The Overachiever's Guide to Nailing Your Spiritual Growth in Record Time.
Nice. So, get your title there.
It needs a shorter title. Yes.
here's a interesting concept that my friend and I have been sort of batting back and forth, but it's like each person's on this, their own journey, their own healing journey progression. We have, like, if we want to change the world collectively, our societies, our institutions, organizations, stuff like that, treating them, my friend's theory is that most organizations or governments are operating like a person with trauma, and that we need to sort of think about the same progression, but collectively. Any thoughts you might want to just add into that concept?
So if we're talking about the US, there's another piece of the puzzle, which is DC. The egregore of DC is holding a pattern from the 1700s and fueling the current culture. And it is not easily swayed or moved, because the energetic construct of the egregore was literally etched into the architecture of DC. So I don't know if you're familiar with the Masonic background of Washington, DC.
Like how it's laid out in the different, you know, like the
pentacle,
the geometry of the,
And, you know, there's a very real egregore there. Kathy and I ran into it when we did a magical training in Arlington, Virginia, and it kicked our butts. And that's hard to do. So, you know, Kathy and I together are pretty much inviolable, but you know, DC was hard, man. So, you know, the key is going to be to, you know, yes, the country is acting as though it is traumatized. I mean, the whole world has been traumatized by COVID. Let's start with that. Mm-hmm. COVID was trauma. It was a forced hermitage, which then forced us to be by ourselves and to look at all the crap that we had been running around like chickens with our heads cut off, trying not to pay attention to. And there was a mass amount of depression and suicidal ideation and burnout and all of the things, right? It was a massive full-scale trauma to the entire planet, with very few exceptions. You know, Iceland is a notable exception.
Oh, really?
They didn't get COVID. They didn't get it. So, you know, they couldn't have people come and go, and the tourism industry was screwed. But otherwise, they generally did okay. So there were a few notable exceptions. But in general, most of the planet has been traumatized. And so when we look at it from that perspective, you know, the first rule of trauma is you need to give yourself space to acknowledge what's happened. And the biggest problem I see is most people are going, well, I wasn't traumatized. It was fine. How hard was it to be at home? It wasn't that big a deal. And they're minimizing, which is what traumatized people do. They minimize, right? And so, you know, the first step to healing is to acknowledge that there's something to be healed, right? And I don't see that happening yet. At least not in anything other than the spiritual communities, right?
And then, what would that even look like?
Well, I mean, it's just acknowledging that that it was hard. Acknowledging that, you know, that instead of pointing the finger outside of you and going, you did this to me, right? Which is the blame. It's the blame game, right? It's like, if you're pointing at somebody else, you're not noticing what part you played in the experience, right? And so long as finger pointing is happening, we got a problem, right? Because people aren't looking at themselves. You can't control the outside world. You can only control yourself. You know, Joe Dispenza tells that story about the doctor who went into the psych hospital in Hawaii and did the Ho'oponopono process. And he looked for in himself and healed those pieces in himself that were reflected in the patients and the staff. And it closed because, you know, they all got better and they all
amazing story.
Right. So, I mean, that would be the path, right? Because that's the only path we have, is to do the work on ourselves. Right. So take responsibility for your own actions, take responsibility for your own reactions. take responsibility for your own creation of the life that's around you. Don't fall into this victimization of, oh, corporate greed, oh, you know, billionaires are evil, or, you know, oh, you know, whatever. Because if you think badly of corporations and you think badly of moneyed people, then you will never be successful, right? And we want people who have a conscience to be successful, because then they have the ability to make change, right? So, you know, better to clear it out of yourself and to step forward into your own strength and your own beingness, and then let that ripple out around you, because you can't change yourself and have it not impact the people around you, even if you're not intending to, especially if you're not intending to. Because when you try to force something down somebody else's throat, they're not gonna take it. You know, when we hand somebody something before they're ready to receive it, we inoculate them against ever receiving it, because they will, from that point forward, go, yeah, 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 I know you tried, blah, 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 I'm done, I'm not doing that. Mm. Whereas if you waited until they were ready, they would have taken it in and integrated it, right? And that was the biggest lesson I had to learn. Kathy taught me that one back like 20 years ago, because I used to do that. I could see the potential. I could see where people could go, and I could see what was going to be, you know, the pathway for them. And I'd be like, bang, 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 this, this, this. And they're like, no, no, no. And I'm like, yes, yes, yes. And she's like, you do realize that you're inoculating them against ever. I'm like, but I'm right. They're like, she's like, yeah, you're right. But they're never going to take it in if you keep beating on them like that.
Mm.
And the more you beat on them, the longer it'll take them to take it in. And so, you know, that's when you're new, right? Or newish in my case. You know, I was still young. I was still, you know, establishing my value by being right. Right? I had to be right. That's how I established my value. Yeah. When you do that, then that's where the path that you take. So, you know, there's a lot of ways in which we are well-meaning and yet still doing damage. So.
Yeah. Yeah, this is great. This is good. It's good parenting advice there too. I'm always thinking, what? Like, it's good parenting advice there.
Yes.
As well. Yeah. Whenever I rush my kids to something, it slows everything down.
Yeah,
we're already here.
Well, kids are much more kinesthetic.
Kids are more kinesthetic.
Kids are much more kinesthetic. They're in their bodies, and so they haven't learned to be up in their heads yet. And in your body, it takes you longer to do a physical thing instead of a mental thing, right? And so it literally takes longer to receive the information, because you're in your body, more embodied than we are on a daily basis. And therefore, they are going to be slower to accept information in because of that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that makes sense. And why kids are always just climbing around at dinner time instead of just sitting and eating.
Right.
Well, Kelly, this has been fantastic. It's been a lot of fun.
I've had a lot of fun too. Yeah.
I had a fun. It's been nice. where would you like to direct people to find you?
Can you hear me?
There we go.
I missed you. I missed all of that. You froze entirely for me. Say it again.
Where would you like to direct people to find you?
Yes. They can find me at kellysparta.com, just like you see on the screens, K-E-L-L-E, kellysparta, like the Greek city state, S-P-A-R-T-A.com. And everything you need to know will be there. So
wonderful. Well, yeah, thanks so much. It's been great.
Yeah. Oh, and check out the podcast, Spirit Sherpa.
Yeah, you've got a lot of episodes.
Oh, yeah. We've got like 300 episodes. So yeah, it's a lot of content. I would recommend starting at the beginning. Even if you're more advanced, I would recommend starting at the beginning, because we reference back a lot, and the beginning sets the foundation for everything that comes after. So
good to know.
We're 4.5 years in, so it's a lot of content.
Amazing.
Yeah. Yeah. It's such an adventure, because we've had like 250,000 downloads from two-thirds of the countries around the world. It's just stunning. It's really cool.
Love it. Yeah, it's fun. It's fun to think about someone in a country that I've never been to listening to the show.
I know, right? And I'm always like, they don't even speak English there, right? Yeah. I'm always floored. I'm always floored when I see things that come up from countries that are like, they're not English speaking. I'm like, I don't even know how they found me. So, but I'm always very grateful.
Yeah, wonderful. Yeah, and thanks for the support, the business reading during the I'll let you know how it goes when I bring in that alignment. And yeah, we'll
try not to hold on to things.
Don't hold on to things?
Yeah, when you go to step into that, it's going to be going at gale force speed. Don't try to hold on to things. Don't try to ground. Just let it take you.
Okay.
Okay. Yeah. Because the energetics already set up. So,
yeah. Okay. Good. Good to know. All right. We'll talk soon.
All right. Thanks.
Bye, Kelly.
Bye.